Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the Wyoming Supreme Court's Children's Justice Project, I would like to welcome you to the CJP monthly training series. The training is offered the second Thursday of every month from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. for key stakeholders involved in the Wyoming juvenile court system. We have a great training lined up for you today. To download the materials for today's training, please visit the CJP website at www.courts.state.wy.us/CJP and click on the training tab. If you have questions, please call in during the last 10 minutes of the training. The phone number is 917-889-8064. Again, that number is 917-889-8064. You may also post questions and comments using the chat session on the Blog Talk Radio website. After today's training, please go to the CJP webpage to complete a survey. We hope you find today's training beneficial.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Crystal Girolami. I'm filling in for Whitney Agopian, the CJP coordinator. Today, we have Lisa Finke, a guardian ad litem and parent attorney with Finke Law, LLC in Cheyenne, Wyoming, presenting to us on teamwork in juvenile court. This blog talk will cover the multidisciplinary process, the roles of MDT members, the purpose of MDT meetings, and how to effectively work as a team within juvenile court. This blog talk will include information on the statutory responsibilities of MDT members and how to work as a team to benefit families. Thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you, Crystal. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm glad to be back for another blog talk episode, this time to talk about teamwork in juvenile court. I want to begin by apologizing. I have a little bit of a cold. I've come to call it the curse of the blog talk. It seems like every time I give one of these presentations, I have a cold. So I'm going to try and make it through this, but I apologize if I'm clearing my throat quite a bit. So today we're going to talk about teamwork in general, and more specifically, teamwork within the MDT process of a juvenile court case. There aren't any materials associated with this presentation to be downloaded off of the website, but I would advise you that large portions of this presentation are based on the MDT handbook that was put out by the Children's Justice Project, and that handbook is available for download from the CJP website for anyone that's interested in reviewing or having that MDT handbook. So last night, as I was getting ready for this presentation, reviewing my notes, trying to decide how I wanted to approach this and what information I wanted to bring forward to everyone, I had the TV running in the background, and I was watching an episode of the TV show Top Chef. For those of you that don't know what Top Chef is, it's a reality TV show on cooking where contestants compete against each other in a series of cooking challenges over several weeks, with the end goal being that the contestant wants to be the last chef standing and win the competition and win some money and some prizes and some other things. So on this show, Top Chef, every chef is out to prove that they're the best chef on the show week after week, and every week an individual winner is announced for that week. A loser is announced as well, and one person is voted off the show every week. Even though only one winner can be announced each week, the show routinely requires the contestants to compete in team challenges. The individual winner comes from the winning team, and someone from the losing team goes home. Because of this, the contestants are put in this unique situation where their main goal is to come out on top as the winner. Yet at the same time, they have to learn to put their personal goal aside and learn to work with their teammates to achieve a common goal of winning the challenge. In the episode I was watching last night, one of the assigned teams had an every man for himself mentality. Instead of working as a team to win the challenge, they all went into the challenge trying to score an individual win. The end result was a complete disaster for the team, and the team challenge portion of the competition failed miserably, and they were the losing team. The judges gave them some really good feedback at the end of the show, though, on what happened and their failures as a team. And one of the judges in particular told the members of the losing team, it doesn't matter how good of a chef you are if you can't work as a member of a kitchen. And I think that advice can be modified for this presentation today and for what we do as professionals in juvenile court. It doesn't matter how good you are at your job if you can't work with other members of the team, of the court process, of the MDT, you're not going to be able to achieve the end goal. So let's start there. What is the end goal of the juvenile court process? To begin with, let's start by looking at the state statutes and what they tell us the purpose of court proceedings is. For abuse and neglect proceedings, the purpose can be found in Wyoming Statute 14.3.201. The purpose is to intervene on behalf of a child suspected of being abused or neglected, to protect the best interest of the child, to further offer protective services when necessary in order to prevent any harm to the child or any other children living in the home, to protect children from abuse or neglect which jeopardizes their health or welfare, to stabilize the home environment, to preserve family life whenever possible, and to provide permanency for the child in appropriate circumstances. The child's health, safety, and welfare shall be of paramount concern in implementing and enforcing the act. Now, interestingly enough, the CHINS, or Child in Need of Supervision statutes, don't provide for a purpose statement, but the Juvenile Justice Act does. And so the Juvenile Justice Act, which relates to delinquencies, states in Wyoming Statute 14.6.201C, this act shall be construed to effectuate the following public purposes: to provide for the best interests of the child and the protection of the public and public safety, consistent with the best interests of the child and the protection of the public and public safety, to promote the concept of punishment for criminal acts while recognizing and distinguishing the behavior of children who have been victimized or have disabilities, such as serious mental illness that requires treatment, or children with a cognitive impairment that requires services, to remove, where appropriate, the taint of criminality from children committing certain unlawful acts, and to provide treatment, training, and rehabilitation that emphasizes the accountability and responsibility of both the parent and the child for the child's conduct, reduces recidivism, and helps children to become functioning and contributing adults. To provide for the care, the protection, and the wholesome moral, mental, and physical development of children within the community whenever possible, using the least restrictive and most appropriate interventions. To be flexible and innovative and encourage coordination at the community level to reduce the commission of unlawful acts by children. To achieve the foregoing purposes in a family environment whenever possible, separating the child from the child's parents only when necessary for the child's welfare or in the interest of public safety, and when a child is removed from the child's family to ensure that individual needs will control placement and provide the child the care that should be provided by parents, and to provide a simple judicial procedure through which the provisions of this act are executed and enforced, and in which the parties are assured a fair and timely hearing and their constitutional and other legal rights recognized and enforced. So, summarizing juvenile court overall in a nutshell, the purpose of juvenile court is to protect children, provide for the best interests of children, considering the public needs, to keep children in the home and community whenever possible, and to improve family life. So these are the overall goals we should be working to achieve within the juvenile court system. Knowing this, despite our own individual goals and responsibilities, depending on the position that we have within the system, these should be our team goals. To achieve these goals, we do have to learn how to work as a team. We all know that within the juvenile court system, there's a high level of burnout in almost every position. The jobs that we work are emotionally and mentally taxing, and oftentimes we all have more work than we can handle. There's a 2017 study out of the University of Missouri-Columbia that found that one of the biggest factors in alleviating burnout in the child welfare system is a positive perception, teamwork, and working with a team. That study found that when members of a team share information, get each other's perspective, share resources, and communicate, they're far more likely to be invested in the work that they do. Now, sharing information, getting another's perspective, sharing resources, and communicating These are all things that should be a part of the MDT process in every juvenile case. Before I go too much further, I do want to note that throughout the state, the MDT process varies. Different areas of the state have developed different approaches to the MDT process, and so you should always be aware of how local practice takes place and how things are run in your community and what the judges in your community expect out of an MDT. So, what is an MDT? An MDT, or multidisciplinary team, is a statutorily mandated group of people that are tasked with working together for the best interest of the child and the family. Wyoming statutes require the juvenile court to appoint an MDT in all child abuse and neglect cases, child in need of supervision cases, and delinquency cases within 10 days of the filing of a petition. Pursuant to these statutes, MDTs must review the child's personal and family history, school, health, and DFS records, and any other pertinent information for the purpose of making written recommendations to the juvenile court. He is then to formulate recommendations to the court as to what appropriate case plan goals are for the case. As part of this process, the MDT should consider the best interest of the child, the best interest of the family, the most appropriate and least restrictive case planning options available, as well as the cost of care. In the Children's Justice Project MDT handbook, it says, the formation of an MDT is intended to ensure that all the circumstances impacting the child and family, especially those related to potential strengths and needs, are fully identified and considered in formulating recommendations for the court. To make good court recommendations, the team should include family members and professionals who have particular knowledge of the child and family. Before making court recommendations, the MDT should identify the strengths of the child and family. Taking into consideration the family's strengths, the MDT should determine the child's and family's needs and identify the services and supports likely to address those needs. The MDT should also recommend measurable goals designed to track progress in addressing the family's pertinent issues. The MDT should recommend the least restrictive means of attaining the goals and then closely monitor the progress in subsequent meetings to ensure success by the family. The MDT must be appointed within 10 days of the filing of a petition and should meet as soon as reasonably possible in order to recommend services for children and families whenever a child has been removed or is at risk of removal from the home. Potential services that could help to reduce or prevent the need for more intrusive actions should be immediately identified and made available to the child or family. Regardless of whether an allegation is going to be admitted or denied, services should be quickly provided to provide for the child's safety and well-being. The Children's Justice Project MDT handbook also identifies core values and guiding principles the MDT should abide by. The core values are, one, the MDT should be family-centered with the best interests of the child and the needs of the family governing the types of prevention, intervention, and treatment services recommended. Two, the MDT shall recommend services that are located in the community if they are the most appropriate services available to fit the individual needs of the child and family. And three, each child and family shall have an MDT that is aware of their unique qualities and use their strengths and challenges as the foundation for determining the recommendations for the court. The guiding principles from the handbook are as follows. One, the MDT should recommend testing or evaluations when a child or family has presenting issues that are apparent or known. Two, children and families should have access to all services available that address the physical, emotional, social, educational, medical, and dental needs identified. Three, placement and services should be provided in the least restrictive environment that is appropriate. Four, the children, families, surrogate families, and immediate caretakers of children should be full participants in all aspects of developing the MDT report and the Department of Family Services case plan. Five, all service providers engaged with the child and or family should be represented or provided input to the MDT so that services may be coordinated and adapted to a child's and family's changing needs. Six, the MDT should support and promote prevention, early identification, and intervention of services to assist children and families involved in the system and enhance the likelihood of positive outcomes. 7, transitions to independent living should be ensured for children based on their needs as they reach adulthood. 8, the MDT should ensure that the rights of children and families are represented and advocacy efforts are promoted. 9, children and families should receive services without regard to race, religion, national origin, sex, sexual orientation, physical disability, or other characteristics. 10, services should be sensitive and responsive to all cultures and the unique needs of the children and families. 11, MDT recommendations should be made as soon as possible to meet the family's needs, but no later than the deadlines required by federal and state laws. 12, the MDT should promote a balanced and restorative justice approach for delinquent youth that strives to balance the court's response in order to, 1, involve the victim and appropriately hold the youth accountable for his actions, 2, identify and address the youth's strengths and needs for competency development, and 3, ensure community protection. Now, there haven't been a lot of studies done on the effectiveness of the MDT process. But the few that have been done show that when MDT teams work together with a respectful environment and collaboration of the team members, MDTs can be highly successful in achieving a common goal. The factors most detrimental to MDT success were found to be members not working well with each other, poor communication, and lack of willingness to hear others' perspective. Wyoming's MDT process doesn't require the team to come to a unanimous decision, although that is the preferred method. If the members of the team can't agree as to recommendations, the recommendations are taken to the court and the judge makes the final decision. Because of this process, it's okay to disagree in MDT meetings, civilly, of course. MDT meetings shouldn't be a grounds for bickering and arguing until everyone comes to the same position. They should be a grounds for people to express their opinions and positions with feedback from other members of the team as to why they do or don't agree, hopefully coming to some sort of consensus based off of feedback given by the various members. However, the MDT should always keep in mind that the child and the family are the first and foremost priority. So let's talk about who is on an MDT. Wyoming's require that certain members be appointed to the MDT. Wyoming Statutes 14.3.427C, 14.6.227C, and 14.6.427C provide that appointed members to an MDT shall include the child's parent, parents, or guardian, a representative of the school district who has direct knowledge of the child, and if the child receives special education, is a member of the child's individualized education plan team, a representative of DFS, the child's psychiatrist, psychologist, or mental health professional, the district or county attorney or his designee, the child's attorney or guardian ad litem if one is appointed by the court, the court-appointed special advocate if one is appointed by the court, and the foster parent. There are other members who may be named in the court order. Pursuant to Wyoming Statutes 14.3.427D, 14.6.227D, and 14.6.427D, these optional statutory members could include, if appropriate, the child, a relative, if the predisposition study indicates a parent or child has special needs, an appropriate representative of the Department of Health's Behavioral Health Division who has knowledge of the services available in the state system of care that are pertinent to those identified needs, and other professionals or persons who have particular knowledge relating to the child or his family or expertise in children's services and the child's or parent's specific disability or special needs, including linguistic and cultural needs. So now that we know who can be on an MDT, let's talk about the role that these MDT members play. Turning again back to the Children's Justice Project MDT handbook, let's talk about a few of the key MDT members. First off is the parent. The role of the parents, including the non-custodial parent, is to serve as an advocate for themselves and or their child. Background information and current living situation information related to the child and the family in terms of physical and mental health, chemical abuse, peers, education. They provide a history of events as well as prior services or supports, whether they were successful, and what could be successful. Parents can provide alternative placement options when a less restrictive option is not possible, either as a non-custodial parent or other family member. Parents can offer information on how their child is doing and what they feel is best for him or her. Parents can assist when formulating family service plan recommendations and voice concerns they have about whether the family will be able to realistically participate in the family service plan recommendations and achieve the family service plan goals. Parents can also identify barriers to successful completion of the family service plan. School representatives. The role of the educational representative is to inform the team of educational needs and concerns of the child and coordinate education services and transitions. The educational representative is also primarily responsible for advising the MDT as to the educational appropriateness of the placement. The representative should have direct knowledge of the child and should gather relevant information from other school staff. The person may also have knowledge about the family. Specifically, the representative should provide the MDT with information on the child's educational program at school, along with other pertinent information that would be helpful. For instance, the school representative should report on the child's performance at school, including grades, attendance, discipline issues, progress or lack of progress in academics, problem behaviors, and any other areas of concern. If the child has an IEP, it is required that the MDT representative be a member of the IEP team. If the child must transition to a placement outside school district boundaries, the school representative should facilitate the education component of the transition to and from placement whenever possible. The child protection caseworker is the next member we'll talk about. The role of the caseworker in the MDT meeting involves providing the history of the case leading up to the petition filing, the current status of the case, and any other relevant information, including current services and supports. The caseworker should also include this information in the predisposition report. The caseworker should present relevant assessments or evaluations, as well as options for the team's consideration, including potential resources for the child and/or the family. The caseworker should represent family-centered values and principles, involve immediate caretakers of the child, and provide DFS's family service plan recommendations. In doing so, the caseworker should provide the team members guidance on DFS policy and procedures and what service or information the agency can provide the team. The caseworker should provide regular updates to the team on the progress made by the child and the family in completing the family service plan recommendations. In a delinquency case, you'll have your juvenile probation officer. The role of the probation officer is to support the safety of the community, work with the delinquent to address issues associated with the victim, and advise MDT members of best practices associated with delinquent youth. As a team member, the probation officer represents the mission, beliefs, and position of the probation agency. The next member we'll talk about is the mental health provider. The mental health provider's role is to inform the MDT of identified psychological and systemic concerns identified through assessments, family interviews, and client contact. Further, the mental health provider should inform the team of relevant information regarding their client's diagnosis, including a history of their client, in order for the team to make appropriate family service plan recommendations. In addition, the mental health provider contributes to the team by providing specific recommendations to the team concerning appropriate treatment modalities, individualized client needs, and further testing if appropriate. The next member is the prosecutor. The prosecutor represents the state of Wyoming's interests in the legal process. In doing so, the prosecutor is often an important resource for the MDT, providing an explanation of the legal procedure for the case and the team's statutory role of providing recommendations to the court in the manner as prescribed by statute. When making recommendations, the prosecutor should provide expertise regarding federal and state statutory mandates, which the team must follow for disposition of juvenile cases. Recommendations should focus on parents as well as children in all types of cases. In delinquency cases, the prosecutor is also responsible for the public safety interest and providing the MDT with recommendations for sanctions in accordance with the Juvenile Justice Act. The next member is the guardian ad litem. The guardian ad litem represents the child's best interests and their wishes in a hybrid model of representation. The primary role of the GAL is to identify and advocate what is in the child's best interest. The GAL should investigate the allegations in the case, meet with the child and others pertinent to the case, and actively communicate with the professionals involved. The GAL should fully participate in the MDT process in order to develop recommendations which are in the child's best interest. In situations where the child expresses his or her wishes and they are different from what the GAL believes is in the child's best interest, the GAL has an obligation to inform the MDT and the court of the child's wishes as well as what the GAL believes is in the child's best interest. Next member we'll talk about is the CASA advocate or the court-appointed special advocate. A CASA volunteer's role may vary depending on the court's expectations and order. CASAs advocate for the best interest of the child in all aspects of an abuse and neglect case, including safety, permanency, and well-being, either independently or in conjunction with the GAL. The CASA volunteer may independently research the child and the family's circumstances while working with the MDT to create stability for the child and achieve permanency outcomes in a timely manner. Next MDT member is the foster parent or caretakers. Caretakers can be well-informed and make well-informed recommendations about the children and their care and should be allowed to give input in all major decisions affecting the children and their care. If known, the immediate caretaker should provide the team knowledge of the family's strengths and skills to enter into partnerships with the child welfare and or juvenile justice agencies, the court, and service providers to make recommendations and or decisions that protect and nurture the children in their care. The caretaker should provide the team with the most current information on the child, including primary interests, important routines or needs, and current behaviors of the child. In addition, they should express any concerns they have and explain what they can do to assist in meeting the requirements of the family service plan. The MDT member is the parent's attorney. The parent's attorney role is to advocate for his or her client. As such, the attorney is obligated to thoroughly research, investigate, and understand all the facts surrounding his or her client's case in order to make appropriate recommendations to advise him or her. Additionally, the attorney may present his client's point of view to the MDT. It is vitally important that the parent's attorney be present at all MDTs, as the parent will need that attorney to explain the ramifications of the process, recommendations, etc. to the parent. Parents in abuse and neglect cases have the right to legal representation. Typically, parents in juvenile delinquency and CHINS cases do not have court-appointed counsel, but they may retain counsel on their own behalf. The next MDT member is the substance abuse treatment provider. The role of the substance abuse treatment provider is to present an assessment of the client's need for substance abuse treatment and to recommend the type and level of treatment for the youth. The substance abuse treatment provider also serves as a resource specialist to the MDT by informing the team of the types of available substance abuse treatment in the community, as well as in other communities, and the availability of the treatment facility. If the substance abuse treatment provider is currently providing services and the release of confidentiality is signed by the client, they should provide the team with information about past substance abuse history that would be relevant in making family service plan recommendations about the future placement and treatment of the youth. The provider should gather collateral information from previous treatment providers and family members to provide a more complete picture of the youth's needs. Further, the substance abuse treatment provider should recommend the type of treatment that might be effective with a child and or parents and the average duration of the treatment. These are certainly not all the members of the MDT, but they are some of the more major players that you'll see on a lot of MDT teams. So, now that we know what an MDT is and who is on it, what is an MDT team supposed to do? MDT is supposed to identify and assess the family's strengths and needs and make recommendations as to case plan goals and requirements. Prior to an MDT meeting, DFS should be providing the members of the team with a predisposition report. This report should contain information regarding how the family came to the juvenile court's attention, what the presenting issue is, social history of the child and the parent, educational history, physical health history, mental health history, prior offenses or court involvement, social services involvement, and other agency involvement. Other information and records that should be available to the MDT are the DFS Family Service Plan, any independent living or transition plan that exists, documentation for recommendations involving out-of-home placement, copies of the child's or family's evaluations and assessments, and copies of IEPs and educational records. After reviewing this information and meeting as a team to discuss and the current situation of the family and the child, the MDT should formulate recommendations for the court. Any recommendations regarding treatment or rehabilitative services should be made or supported by individuals who are qualified by appropriate education, training, licensure, or certification. In making recommendations, members of the MDT should represent their particular profession and make recommendations consistent with their education, training, and/or certification. Members should not make treatment or other recommendations beyond the scope of their expertise, nor should placement be recommended without adequate assessment and a recommendation for the appropriate level of care by a licensed or certified professional in that particular field. Recommendations should include clear and concise goals regarding the expected result of the treatment or service and estimated timeframes in which these goals should be reached. The goals should be measurable, and the MDT recommendations or DFS Family Service Plan should include plans for the team's appropriate monitoring or oversight of the progress towards reaching the stated goals. If a unanimous agreement is not reached, all positions and rationale should be included in the MDT report for the court to review. Lack of parent or child endorsement of a recommendation should be of special concern to an MDT. If the family doesn't support the plan, it could plan for failure. Recommendations should reflect placement and family service planning. Members should also be given the opportunity to provide a written explanation of their dissenting position for inclusion in the MDT report. So next, I want to talk about what happens after an MDT meeting. In an MDT meeting, the team goes in, they formulate recommendations, they become part of the case plan, the court orders the parties to move forward with these recommendations, but that's not the end of the road. Now all of those recommendations and orders have to be implemented and carried out. That requires teamwork outside of the MDT process, outside of MDT meetings. This idea of teamwork and working as a team for the benefit of the child and family doesn't just end at the end of the MDT meeting. All that work has to be carried out. And while the majority of the work for achieving the case plan goals usually falls on the parents and the Department of Family Services, every team member can have responsibilities outside of the MDT process that they should be carrying on to make sure that a case is moving forward. In order for an MDT to function at the highest level, everyone on the MDT needs to be aware of what their role is and what their responsibilities outside of the MDT meeting are. Then they need to actually be doing the work outside of the MDT meeting to make sure that the case is moving forward. One of the best ways to keep a team on track outside of the MDT meeting is constant communication between team members. Frequent updates and consistent communication are going to keep the team moving forward. They're going to keep the family moving forward. They're going to keep the child moving forward towards that goal of achieving the case plan goals and reunifying or preserving the family. One thing that is important to note for any professional or anyone involved as a member of an MDT is that in your role, in your job, you are probably actually going to be a member of multiple MDTs. You're going to have multiple cases. You're going to be serving on multiple MDTs, and your roles and responsibilities from one team to the next may change depending on the circumstances of the case. Depending on the profession that you come from and your role on the MDT, you're going to have certain roles and responsibilities that are the same in every case, but you're also going to have some that change from case to case. Don't get locked into the mindset that your role and responsibility is set and it should be the same in every case. Maintain that flexibility to modify what you do from case to case to be the most effective team member you can be. In some cases, you may have to put a lot of work into the case outside of the MDT process. In other cases, you may just have to show up to the MDT meeting and give your position. It's all going to be case by case, situation by situation, family by family. So don't get locked in and say, that's not my job. Be willing to be flexible and provide what you can to the team to help with the case. Another important part of being an effective team member is showing respect for the roles and expertise that other team members have. Oftentimes, personalities can clash, conflicts can rise. Don't let personal conflicts or disagreements get in the way of functioning effectively as a team. Learning to work together as a team, learning to put personal differences aside, personal values aside, and come to the table as a team and work for the families is what ultimately makes us successful in this line of work. Also of note is the fact that your team may change over time. Job turnover, movement of the family to new treatment providers, changes in services that are being participated in can all change the makeup of your team. And so when you have a new member coming to the team, it's important to respect that new team member and their role and to ensure that they have all the background information necessary to function as an effective member of the team. One of the things that can really derail an MDT meeting is when you have someone new or someone covering that comes to the case and they don't know any background on the case and they're trying to figure out how to formulate recommendations, what information is important, without having that background. So when you have a new team member come to the table, take the time to give them some background on the case to make sure they understand what the case plan goals are so that they can be an effective member of the team as well. Now, when it comes to teamwork, there are things that an MDT can do to ensure that it's successful. First and foremost, the MDT should make sure that they're enlisting every stakeholder that has valuable information that can be used in the process. Approach your judge about adding members of the MDT if someone's identified that has valuable information or input that could help move the family forward. Approach the judge if you have someone on the MDT that should be removed from the MDT, either because they don't have that information anymore or in some manner they're slowing the MDT down or causing conflict on the MDT. If they're not a necessary party, approach the judge about having them removed. Make sure that you're creating a level playing field in your MDTs where every member of the team gets the chance to honestly contribute his or her position and thoughts. Make sure everyone's getting the opportunity to be heard. Establish some ground rules for respectful communication. For example, in our meetings, say that we're going to listen without interruption. We're going to solicit input from quieter members. We're going to set time limits for certain information so that each team member has their fair share of time to provide information and so that one person is not dominating the meeting. And make sure that your team is establishing clear goals that are focused on the good of the child and the family. And last, celebrate even the small victories. Make sure that there's praise and positive feedback being given, not just to the family, but to other team members as well. This is hard work that we do, and we need to celebrate our successes. So every team that you work with is going to consist of different individuals, ideally possessing a variety of skills necessary to produce positive outcomes. we want different personalities. We want different perspectives. We want different positions to come to the table to look at and evaluate those positions and determine what's going to be best for each family in each case. So these individuals with different skills and positions and opinions, they all bring different things to the table, not just in terms of what they can add to the MDT, but also in terms of what their legal and ethical obligations are based on the role that they play. Some people have legal and ethical obligations that require them to advocate for certain things. For example, parents' attorneys are required to, they're required to advocate for their clients' rights. Prosecutors are required to advocate for the state. GALs are required to advocate for the best interests of the child. And so sometimes you may have an attorney at a meeting that takes a position that you just don't agree with, and you just can't understand why they're saying that's in the best interest of the child or in the best interest of the family. Don't take it personally. Everyone, not just attorneys, but DFS workers, CASA advocates, everyone has their own legal and ethical obligations that they have to meet. And sometimes the position that a person is taking has just as much to do with those obligations as it does with what they believe is in the best interest of the child or the family. While working together with individuals with different perspectives can be difficult, the team process and the MDT process really can bring about good results. But to keep teams working well, the members of the team need to work together and have the skills necessary to work together so that they can recognize the team process, the benefit of the team process, and what the MDT is trying to accomplish. MDTs are a type of teamwork that requires long-term commitment from the participants and flexibility to adjust the plan as needed to benefit the child and the family. Finally, I want to emphasize that the most important team members on any team are the parents and the child. The team should be working with the family, not against the family, and not telling the family what they should or shouldn't do. The more involved and engaged the family is in the process, and the more their voice is heeded, the more likely it is that a positive outcome is going to be achieved in the case. Engaging and maintaining relationships with families can be a time-consuming effort, and it can be very difficult, especially when you're working with families that are dealing with significant difficulties and a distrust of the system. But the team should always be focused on improving the family situation and providing services that benefit the family. Getting the family to buy into the MDT process and the case plan goals is critical for success in a case. The Child Welfare Information Gateway states it this way: engaging families in the casework process promotes the safety, permanency, and well-being of children and families in the child welfare system and is central to successful practice. Effective family engagement occurs when child welfare practitioners actively collaborate and partner with family members through their involvement with the child welfare system, recognizing them as the experts on their respective situations and empowering them in the process. Family engagement is a family-centered and strengths-based approach to making decisions, setting goals, and achieving desired outcomes for children and families. At its best, family engagement encourages and empowers families to be their own champions, working towards case goals that they have helped to develop based on their specific family strengths, resources, and needs. This partnership between caseworkers and families is founded on the principle of communicating openly and honestly in a way that supports disclosure of culture, family dynamics, and personal experiences to meet the individual needs of every family and child. A family engagement approach to casework views families as the experts on their unique challenges and seeks to support them in developing solutions. This strengths based approach empowers and encourages families to partner with child welfare professionals to plan the best services and resources for the family to ensure child safety and in turn improve outcomes for children and families. Including families in decision making and planning processes enhances the fit between family needs and services and makes it more likely the family will participate in services and complete the case plan. So to wrap this presentation up, I want to go back to the realm of reality TV again. When I present to people and when I talk about juvenile court, I usually have a slide at some point in my PowerPoint that flashes the logo for the reality TV show Survivor. So Survivor is a reality TV show where a group of individuals are, in a way, stranded on a desert island, and they have to survive and to learn to work as a team while as individuals trying to scheme to win the game. And they get to vote somebody off the island every week. And ultimately, the goal is to be the last man standing and win some money. I always tell people, juvenile court is not a game of Survivor. We're not there to try and vote somebody off the island. We're not there to try and make sure that our position is the position that wins, that we're the last man standing, that person that we don't like to work with doesn't have a voice in the team, or we don't have to work with them anymore. That's not what this is about. Juvenile court is not a contest. It's not a competition. It's not about winning or losing. It's about families. It's about children. And it's about people and making sure that we are helping people improve the quality of their life. If the juvenile court process works the way that it's supposed to, the way that it's designed, in the end, we're all winners. Families are reunified, children are safe, children are happy. We're happy because we've done our job well, we've saved the taxpayers money, we've stopped the cycle of abuse and neglect, and we've made the world a little bit better place because we've done our jobs and we've done them right. So as I tell people, juvenile court is a team sport. This is not an individualized sport. This is not an individualized area of practice. This is an area where we all have to work together, we all have to have common goals, and we all have to be moving towards those common goals. And to do that, we need to learn to work effectively as team members, both within the MDT process and outside of that process, as we move forward working with families and children to accomplish the goals that were set out in the statute for us to achieve. And just turning back to the very beginning of the process, or the very beginning of this presentation. Again, the purpose of abuse and neglect proceedings is to intervene on behalf of a child suspected of being abused or neglected, to protect the best interest of the child, to further offer protective services when necessary in order to prevent any harm to the child or any other children living in the home, to protect children from abuse or neglect which jeopardizes their health or welfare, to stabilize the home environment, to preserve family life whenever possible, and to provide permanency for the children in appropriate circumstances. That should be our goal in abuse and neglect cases. Turning to delinquency cases, our goal should be to provide for the best interest of the child and the protection of the public and public safety. Consistent with the best interest of the child and the protection of public and public safety, to promote the concept of punishment for criminal acts while recognizing and distinguishing the behavior of children who have been victimized or have disabilities such as serious mental illnesses that require treatment, or children with cognitive impairment that require services, to remove where appropriate the taint of criminality from children committing certain unlawful acts, to provide treatment, training, and rehabilitation that emphasizes the accountability and responsibility of both the parent and the child for the child's conduct, reduces recidivism, and helps children to become functioning and contributing adults, to provide for the care, the protection, and the wholesome moral, mental, and physical development of children within the community whenever possible using the least restrictive and most appropriate interventions, to be flexible and innovative and encourage coordination at the community level to reduce the commission of unlawful acts by children, to achieve the foregoing purposes in a family environment whenever possible, separating the child from the child's parents only when necessary, for the child's welfare or in the interest of public safety, and when a child is removed from the child's family, to ensure that individual needs will control placement and provide the child the care that should be provided by parents, and to provide a simple judicial procedure through which the provisions of this act are executed and enforced, and of which the parties are assured a fair and timely hearing and their constitutional and other legal rights recognized and enforced. So in sum, be a good team member, work to build good teams, communicate, exchange information, and above all, be kind to each other, not only each other as professionals, but to the family and children that we work with as well. And that's what I have for today. So if there's any questions, I will attempt to answer them.
I'm not seeing any on the chat end, Lisa, so I just really want to thank you for participating with us today, and it was awesome, and we hope everyone will join us next month for our next blog talk.
All right. Thank you, Crystal. Have a good day, everyone.
Thanks. You too, Lisa. Bye-bye.